And I'm very happy to have in the studio with us Paula Eisenstein, the author of her debut novel called Flip Turn, which is published by Mansfield Press. And just a little bit about Paula for everyone, that she lives in Toronto with her husband and her son and the vitally necessary two cats for families with writers in them. She was born and came of age in London, Ontario, and received her Bachelor of Arts from Mount Allison University. If a teacher were making comments about Paula on a report card, the teacher might say, "Paula fails to understand the difference between fiction and nonfiction." Please welcome Paula. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. We were here before to talk about the White Collar book, which was edited by Bruce Meyer and Carolyn Meyer. And you mentioned that you had this novel. And I said, keep me in mind when it comes out. And here we are.
I'm really excited to be here.
Good. And so how did it come about to get published with Mansfield Press?
Oh, well, that's a good story. Stuart Ross, who's the primary editor, I would say right now, anyway, at Mansfield, I Facebook friended him after going to one of his workshops.
Yeah, they're great. I've been to one of them.
Yeah. And so I noticed he had posted on Facebook that he was looking for novels. And, of course, I had one stashed away, as we all do. And I remember saying to Larry, my husband, I read it and I was like, oh, that's not me. Because he was saying, like, I don't know, he had words like surreal. And, you know, there's a few adjectives like surreal or this or that. And I was thinking, oh, that's not what mine's like.
Probably surreal and humorous and...
No, that wasn't
humorous?
One of the words.
Oh,
but
really?
I think he wasn't looking for something surreal per se, but he had a list of kind of different... Because I don't really consider my work surreal. I don't know. Maybe. Anyway, that's just me. So after,
no, I don't either.
Yeah. So I thought, no, that's not me. And then I thought about it for a bit more, and I said to Larry, do you think my work is this and this? I can't remember what some of the other ones were. And he was like, yeah, no, send it in. So I did. And then Stuart said, oh, this looks interesting. I wasn't sure what that meant, if he was just being nice. And but in time, it you know, it ended up with his one night at the spring Mansfield launch this spring, introducing me to Dennis. And I had a feeling something was in the works.
Yeah, for sure.
And then they asked if I would like my novel published with them. And, of course, I was really excited.
Absolutely.
To have it published with them.
Was there much of a difference between the manuscript you submitted and the one? Was there a lot of editing done to your work?
I would say not. I actually wrote this in 2006. And I sent it to... I wasn't involved in the literary community at all. I just wrote it.
Wow.
And it was about a third longer, and I sent it to Alana Wilcox at Coach House.
Coach House.
And she was interested. She asked me to, she said it should be shorter. And she was looking for a different kind of a narrative arc, which I couldn't solve. Like, I couldn't do what she wanted me to do, because I felt like there was something really strong already in place. I wasn't sure if she was missing that or anyway. But her suggestion to shorten it, it took me a while because I loved my previous ending. There was like this last scene, and I remember again saying to my husband, okay, I'll chop it off 2 years earlier, but I'm gonna leave that ending, which of course was 2 years down the road. But anyway, eventually I got rid of the ending.
And, you were able to let it go.
And yeah, it was, and I kind of just restructured the ending and some other, you know, Alana's suggestion of an arc. I put a few other kind of devices in to maybe make it a little more cohesive, because you've read it. It's very, you know, quirky. It goes from one scene to another scene in it, but then the chapters tend to be cohesive. But so to answer your question regarding this, there didn't end up being a lot of editing. When I was working with Stuart, the first round of edits were quite light, and he described it as he likes to go into the forest and kind of oh, I hope I haven't got this wrong, but this is how I thought he said it. Like, kind of just, you know, trim away kind of the rough stuff. So the first round wasn't too bad. And then he said, watch out for the second round. And I was very trepidatious. But then the second round wasn't too bad either. But, you know, there was a few things where he just wanted more clarity in areas where I kind of got a little overly poetic. He tried to get me to rein that in. And the language, for the most part, is very clear. People read it and they understand it. And there were some places where it was maybe a little vaguer. And he just kind of, you know, honed it and cleaned it.
Tightened it up, yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it wasn't a lot of editing. And the basic structure stayed in place.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I understand where Alana's coming from, because it doesn't have the traditional arc of a traditional novel with with the antagonist and the protagonist and the climax and the anticlimax. It's
right.
Not that kind of story, I don't think.
Yeah.
And maybe we should talk a bit about what the story is, but it's a first-person narrative. And correct me if I misspeak here, but it's a first-person narrative of a coming-of-age story of someone who, in her family, there is a tragedy that her brother's involved in, and it affects the whole family, and it affects her in her ambitions to become an Olympian swimmer, and sort of growing up from 8 or 9 to a young woman by the time she's in university. And so that's where I think the arc is not, because it's not that kind of, it's more of a journey.
Yeah, I would say I like to, I mean, it is based on my growing years, and I think that I felt that I just wanted to just stay true to, like, a true narrative. So I don't really believe in the traditional narrative, and I have some thoughts in terms of girls' development. I remember talking to a friend of mine who had read one of the early readers, and we'd come up with this term, inverse girl narrative arc. And that was after the fact, after I wrote it. But I feel like there's an inversion, and actually after I read it, I was reading some work by the feminist ethicist Carol Gilligan, and she was describing girls' development and how they get to a point, you know, coming of age, where the big thing is not to hurt others, whereas traditionally boys tend to have more of a separation at that age and off to independence, which in my mind kind of mirrors that kind of the boy arc, the traditional narrative, whereas a lot of times with girls it's an inversion, and it's kind of a loss of freedom is how Carol Gilligan describes it, and kind of a going into becoming less independent and kind of a loss. And so I wanted my arc to go that way and reflect that, but even though it's so common in women's experience, I don't know, we don't have that arc. It's not part of our tradition.
Well, so maybe it will become part of our tradition. Maybe you're branching out in that area, and that's how it starts.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to think I'm the only person who you know, who's working in this direction, but I was very conscious of it.
You're conscious of it.
Yeah, and I felt like I was inventing it myself, but I think there's other people, you know, working in that direction too.
It's an interesting style, because you have sort of subtitles. The chapters themselves, I don't believe, are titled. And then each sort of section within the chapter is titled.
Right, yeah.
Which sort of gives it a bit of a diary feel, I guess.
Yeah, and I think most of the, like almost
feel.
Little vignettes are very, they're very present. They're very in the now.
Yes, it's very present.
But then you'll have one, and then you'll slip to another that's kind of could be in the past, or just could be, or flipping to another totally different kind of thought. So for me, that keeps it really kind of playful and kind of intellectual more, how it bounces off of each other. So I don't know. To me, I see it working that way.
Did you write it that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I usually, when I was writing, I go for a swim in the morning, and then I would come home, and I would just kind of outline the different chapter headings, and like as you, I mean, of course, there was lots of editing after, but basically, those different headings, and then I would write to each heading. So, and I was kind of working on about a chapter a day pace.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty progressive.
Actually. Yeah, I found that it would just, like, those headings would just catch my thoughts, you know,
yeah,
catch my...
Yeah, it's a good organizer.
Yeah.
I noticed the language, which I really liked because it was subtle, but there was, the sentence structures got a little bit more complex as she got older. Like, it starts off, there's very short, and it's like, you know, and I go, well, because she's like 9 years old, what do you expect? And then as you notice she's a teenager, then they get a little bit longer, and she gives it more of her opinions, I guess.
Yeah. It can be
and
a little...
I like that.
Good.
Yeah, I did.
It's a little tricky, though, because it's not like the novel progresses in time, but it starts in grade 8. But she goes backwards in time all the time.
Oh, so okay. Sometimes, so that would be 13.
Yeah, but she's but then she reverts.
Talk about being 10.
Yeah, no, she reverts. Okay. Like, so she kind of jumps back in time sometimes.
Yeah, she does.
And yeah, I'm glad that like you felt like the language it kind does. Of reflected it when it was being edited. Some of the like there was copy editors and such, and they were like they would get a little confused sometimes. They were, and a couple of times I would hear, "How old is she anyway?" So that was could be a little tricky for people
tricky.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think I wanted that jumpiness.
I like that. That's a style that I like. Actually.
Yeah. I like that too.
I know because I tend to write in that fashion and style, and I've had that comment myself. So, but I think it's a very powerful way of presenting a story.
Thanks.
For sure. So it's a blur between fiction and nonfiction. It's based on your story, but there are fictional elements to it.
Yeah, well, I think I think that little part that you read at the beginning, I mean, I haven't really, it's a coy way of addressing it for me. I don't really believe in fiction and nonfiction. I mean, it's hard for me. I mean, I guess just as the structure of the book, you know, is something is the way I think it should be. I'm not a big fan of those categories, fiction and nonfiction. I think the way I see it, the more extreme or personal the perspective gets, then the more that's fiction, right? Because the
I would have gone the other way.
I know, it's strange though. I mean, that's interesting. It's just the deeper she gets in her perspective, and as the novel develops too, like. I feel like she's kind of getting into an unreal world. So she's like, she's losing track of her own truth. So, I mean, so that's part of it too. Like when it's almost like she's creating her own fictional world, but that's her real world. I don't know. Some thoughts.
Don't we all do
yeah.
that?
Like, yeah, but that's like, what I wanted to capture, right?
Yeah, like there are four people in the studio, mm-hmm. and we're all having our own...
Exactly.
Like, if we were to give the story, mm-hmm. it could be completely different from the other.
Exactly.
Like, there's no one reality
exactly.
to anything.
Yeah, and, exactly.
And that's, I think, where the surreal or the dreamlike comes in. That,
yeah.
That it's...
Yeah, and I think I wanted to capture that she... Well, I guess, I mean, she loses track of herself, I think. But, I mean, you could read it other ways, too. But, I mean, nonfiction is, like, it's almost a formula, right? Like, if you say things a certain way, then it's nonfiction, right? If you say, and the building was red and it had, you know, if it's that's what we all agree upon, then we can call that nonfiction. But like you said, I mean, there's a lot of our personal realities that... Like, you don't understand, or I don't understand, so then that's fiction, right? Or is it?
Oh, that's a, I don't know. But I think that's a really good, because I always think that, you know, what my, you know, just because it's my reality doesn't mean it's my truth. It's my perception, but that doesn't mean that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
That's what I was trying to right, say with right. what my truth is.
Right,
and
yeah.
Like, and so I think I see what you're saying there, that there's a blur between, because I talk to, you know, authors, and they'll say, who write fiction, and they'll say, but there's always a piece of me in it.
Like, yeah,
there
exactly.
has to be, because yeah. it's coming from that yeah. creator. So yeah. there, it can't be a complete...
I totally agree with that.
Yeah,
I totally agree with that. I was just reading a passage before I came here, and I mean, so much of it is based on my experience, my time when I was young. But I was reading this one passage, and I thought, oh, I remember that. Like, I was describing this whole theme from when I was 30, right? So, so anyway.
So there's... would you like to read? Maybe we should.
Yeah.
If you'd like to read
sure.
the book. And, okay. This is Paula Eisenstein, and she'll be reading from her novel called Flip Turn, which was just published by Mansfield Press.
Okay, so like you were saying, there's a lot of kind of small subsections. So I'm going to just skip around and read a few of them that... I like at the moment. okay. So this one's entitled Visit. Mom and Dad are mostly talking to him. We're in a long corridor with high ceilings and glass windows that make it bright with lots of panes in them. The panes make it look homey, like the Christmas cards that have the cute little red brick houses, also with the windows with the panes, but with the snow nestled in the separating parts of the panes too. There's a wicker picnic basket with special things, including a jar of Klondike Dad made him. Klondike is the special sandwich spread he makes that Cal loves. It's Dad's way of showing he still loves him, and that's what we're all here showing. Dad always wants to be everybody's best friend, so it makes sense that he makes him the Klondike. It's also brave for him to keep caring, because a psychopath with no feelings is dangerous, isn't it? Because of what he did, remember? And here's another one from a little later on called Pink Warts. Then, when we're at the swim meet, Louise introduces me to Luke Humphreys, who swims for Pointe Claire, which is a really good team with lots of national champions and team members, and Luke is one of them in the 200 breaststroke, with gorgeous skin all over his body, like a wall of it, sweet brown eyes like chocolate kisses, really, and blonde hair that poofs up in the front, even though it's straight. She just made friends with him, like that. Then they're playing knuckles, which is where you face each other and line up your hands downwards facing in fists and try to wrap their knuckles with yours. But you're not allowed to move their... Oh, but they're not allowed to move their hands until you move yours. Louise gets me to do that with him. Except, oh no, the warts. Because I have these warts on my hands. They're so gross that my best friend Julie Pollard from grade 8, but who's not my best friend anymore, came up with the idea for me to give them names. Then she helped me make up a combination of silly and classy names for them, so I would feel better about having them. Also, I put pink nail polish on them, which is half coming off from all the swimming, because the wart kill stuff doesn't work, and someone told me nail polish would suffocate them. I would never talk to Luke on my own anyway. Most swimmers have the really big chest muscles, but Luke's, along with the kind of beautiful skin he has on them, are even bigger. Even though he turns out so friendly, his voice so warm and letting you in despite his gorgeousness, not even disgusted by the warts and liking their funny names and not coming at all flirty and scary either, I still would never talk to him on my own without Louise there. It's not just that I know knowing a boy like that would be a problem for what my family needs. A boy you like for being a boy, a boy you think about wanting to like you, but for my own self, I wouldn't know if they felt trustworthy. How do you know who is going to be trustworthy? I think the answer is no one. And, here's one called Starting. For Yvonne Novak's period starting, she wouldn't bother to tell her mother about it. Her mother is too old and unaware of what is going on. Yvonne's mother isn't fat, but her body goes out like a triangle from her shoulders from having no waist anymore. She wears the house-cleaning lady kind of dresses, but they're so thin and old, you can see how far her breasts are hanging down and to the side, so there's a big space of flat chest in between them. There's no point for Yvonne telling her. It would just make everything more complicated. She wouldn't ask her older sister, who lives in an apartment in Toronto, what to do, because she's too far away. When it was my period, my mom started me out with pads you attached to your underwear, then moved me up to tampons to push inside when I was ready. For Yvonne, I'm starting off right away with tampons, because pads are so cumbersome. It's what Yvonne wants, too. We're at the movies, Saturday afternoon. It's hard for Yvonne to enjoy because of how much it's hurting her. She's trying to keep it to herself, so only an occasional frightened look in the dark is telling me. Maybe she didn't push it in all the way. Here's one summer I rowed, so this is a little rowing one. Topside. Despite the juicy, cool feeling of running under huge shady trees and off a river breeze, and then the part when we get in the boat and skedaddle on the water top, our eight oars, the water spider's legs, the teeny shouting coxswain, our small collective head, I'm craving to plunge under the river's surface into its dreamy blur, to rip off the stale, filmy, cooked-on extra layer, the skin of everyday acquaintance that stops you from going down. I think it would be nice for them, too, nice if this sleek congregation of the eight could also get to do that. Other neighbors. Our next-door neighbors hate us. Because it's downtown, it's a mixture. There are rental units that get run down looking, which is what our house used to be. Then there's like what our house is now. Nice, fixed up. Then there are even more gorgeous houses, practically mansions, like the Walters, Carolyn and Peter's, across the street. The next door neighbor's is a two-story house turned into a duplex with two rental units, one on each floor, but it still looks in quite nice condition. They're on the main floor and like to sit out on the porch, but they are both really ugly. The problem is trying to decide who is uglier. I think it's her, but there's something gorgeously juicy about her ugliness, too. It's her head. She has a big, round pumpkin head, but with a really flat face. Sometimes pumpkins do really grow like that. Her face is pasty white. She wouldn't look so ugly if she didn't always have a disgusted look on her face. Her mouth is turned down, with the pointy teeth showing like a grimace. Her nostrils are permanently flared. I don't know why they're always so upset with us, other than we exist and go in and out of our house. Their house sits a little higher up on the land than ours, and is fairly close, so they're always looming. They all must also be mad, because our house is so pretty, and it's ours. What's strange is they have a daughter, who's a little older than me, and has the same flat pumpkin face head and fair skin as her mother, plus with super plucked eyebrows arched up, exaggerating the great expansive face. But she has a pretty and slim body that doesn't look all rigid and stiff and puffed up like theirs. It moves adroitly through them, delicate like a bat catching bugs at dusk. She's practically beautiful. I don't understand how having that daughter around wouldn't soften them, make them take it a little easy on their hatred of us. One thing I like about them is they don't hate us because of what Cal did. I just know they don't know about that because they're so ignorant and mean even without that. So there's nothing to hide from except regular hate.
Thank you. You're listening to Paula Eisenstein read from her brand new novel, her debut novel called Flip Turn, published by Mansfield Press.